This is Jennifer Love reading to you some poetry and prose. I Am Wunk by Jack Prelutsky. I am Wunk, a wacky wizard, and I wield a willow wand. I wave it once, and there you swim, a minnow in a pond. I wave it twice, and there you sit, a lizard on a log. I wave it thrice, and there you fly, a fly before a frog. I am Wunk, a wily wizard, and I behold a crystal sphere. I spin it with my fingers, you've a carrot in your ear. I roll it on the table, you've an anvil on your head. I place it on your pillow, you've a lion in your bed. I am Wunk, a wondrous wizard, and I wear a woolen hat. I take it off and fold it, you are smaller than a cat. I put it in my pocket, you are smaller than a mouse. Do be quick, your doorbell's ringing. I am Wunk outside your house. How Pure at Heart by Alfred Tennyson. How pure at heart and sound in head, with what divine affections bold, should be the man whose thought would hold an hour's communion with the dead. In vain shalt thou or any call the spirits from their golden day, except like them thou too canst say, my spirit is at peace with all. They haunt the silence of the breast, imaginations calm and fair, the memory like a cloudless air, the conscience as a sea at rest. But when the heart is full of din, and doubt beside the portal waits, they can but listen at the gates, and hear the household jar within. The House by the Side of the Road by Sam Walter Foss. There are hermit souls that live withdrawn in a place of their self-content. There are souls like stars that dwell apart in a fellowless firmament. There are pioneer souls that blaze their paths where the highways never ran. But let me live by the side of the road and be a friend to man. Let me live in a house by the side of the road where the race of men go by. The men who are good and the men who are bad, as good and as bad as I. I would not sit in the scorner's seat or hurl the cynic's ban. Let me live in a house by the side of the road and be a friend to man. I see from my house by the side of the road, by the side of the highway of life, the men who press with the ardor of hope, the men who are faint with the strife. But I turn not away from their smiles nor their tears, both parts of an infinite plan. Let me live in my house by the side of the road and be a friend to man. I know there are brook-gladdened meadows ahead and mountains of wearisome height, and the road passes on through the long afternoon and stretches away to the night. But still I rejoice when the travelers rejoice and weep with the strangers that moan. Nor live in my house by the side of the road like a man who dwells alone. Let me live in my house by the side of the road where the race of men go by. They are good, they are bad, they are weak, they are strong, wise, foolish, so am I. Then why should I sit in the scorner's seat or hurl the cynic's ban? Let me live in my house by the side of the road and be a friend to man. A Prayer by Theodosia Garrison. Let me work and be glad, O Lord, and I ask no more, with will to turn where the sunbeams burn at the sill of my workshop door. Aforetime I prayed my prayer for the glory and gain of earth, but now grown wise and with open eyes, I have seen what the prayer was worth. Give me my work to do, and peace of the task well done, youth of the spring and its blossoming, and the light of the moon and sun, pleasure of little things that never may pall or end, and fast in my hold no lesser gold than the honest hand of a friend. Let me forget in time folly of dreams that I had. Give me my share of a world most fair. Let me work and be glad. The Day is Done by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The day is done, and the darkness falls from the wings of night, as a feather is wafted downward from an eagle in his flight. I see the lights of the village gleam through the rain and the mist, and a feeling of sadness comes o'er me that my soul cannot resist, a feeling of sadness and longing that is not akin to pain, and resembles sorrow only, as the mist resembles the rain. Come, read to me some poem, some simple and heartfelt lay, that shall soothe this restless feeling and banish the thoughts of day. Not from the grand old masters, not from the bard sublime, whose distant footsteps echo through the corridors of time. For like strains of martial music, their mighty thoughts suggest life's endless toil and endeavor, and tonight I long for rest. Read from some humbler poet, whose songs gushed from his heart, as showers from the clouds of summer, or tears from the eyelids start, who through long days of labor, and nights devoid of ease, still heard in his soul and music of wonderful melodies. Such songs have power to quiet the restless pulse of care, and come like the benediction that follows after prayer. Then read from the treasured volume the poem of thy choice, and lend to the rhyme of the poet the beauty of thy voice. And the night shall be filled with music, and the cares that infest the day shall fold their tents like the Arabs, and as silently steal away. Such songs have power to quiet the restless pulse of care, and come like the benediction that follows after prayer. Then read from the treasured volume the poem of thy choice, and lend to the rhyme of the poet the beauty of thy voice. And the night shall be filled with music, and the cares that infest the day shall fold their tents like the Arabs, and as silently steal away. Know Thyself by Angela Morgan. Reined by an unseen tyrant's hand, spurred by an unseen tyrant's will, a quiver at the fierce command that goads you up the danger hill. You cry, O fate, O life, be kind, grant but an hour of respite. Give one moment to my suffering mind, I cannot keep the pace and live. But fate drives on and will not heed the lips that beg, the feet that bleed, drives while you faint upon the road, drives with a menace for a goad, with fiery reins of circumstance, urging his terrible advance. The while you cry in your despair, the pain is more than I can bear. Fear not the goad, fear not the pace, plead not to fall from out the race. It is your own self driving you, yourself that you have never known, seeing your little self alone, yourself high-seated charioteer, master of cowardice and fear, yourself that sees the shining length of all the fearful road ahead, knows that the terrors that you dread are pygmies to your splendid strength, strength you have never even guessed, strength that has never needed rest, yourself that holds the mastering rein, seeing beyond the sweat and pain and anguish of your driven soul the patient beauty of the goal, fighting upon the terror field where man and fate came breast to breast, pressed by a thousand folds to yield, tortured and wounded without rest, you cried, be merciful, O life, the strongest spirit soon must break before this all unequal strife, this endless fight for failure's sake. But fate, unheeding, lifted high his sword and thrust you through to die. And then there came one strong and great who towered high o'er chance and fate, who bound your wound and eased your pain and bade you rise and fight again. And from some source you did not guess gushed a great tide of happiness, a courage mightier than the sun. You rose and fought, and fighting won. It was your own self saving you, yourself no man has ever known, looking on flesh and blood alone, that self that lives to close to God, as roots that feed upon the sod, that one who stands behind the screen looks through the window of your eyes, a being out of paradise, the self no human eye has seen, the living one who never tires, fed by the deep eternal fires, your flaming self with two-edged sword made the likeness of the Lord, angel and guardian at the gate, master of death and king of fate. I Want to Go Wandering by Vachel Lindsay. I want to go wandering. What shall declare I will regret if I dare? To the rich days of age, to some mid-afternoon, a wide, fenceless prairie, a lonely old tune, anthills and sunflowers and sunset too soon. Behind the brown mountain the sun will go down. I shall climb to the sumptuous crown, to the rocks of the summit, and find some strange things, some echo of echoes when the thunder wind sings, old Spanish necklaces, Indian rings, or a feeble old eagle with great dragging wings. He may leave me and soar, but if he shall die, I shall bury him deep while the thunder winds cry. And there, as the last of my earth nights go, what is the thing I shall know? With a feather cast off from his wings, I shall write, be it revel or psalm, or whisper of redwood or cypress or palm, the treasure of dream that he brings. The soul of the eagle will call, whether he lives or he dies, the cliff and the prairie call, the sagebrush and starlight sing, and the songs of my faraway Sagamon call, from the plume of the bird of the Rockies, and midnight's omnipotent wing, the last of my earth nights will ring, with cries from a far haunted sea, and all of my wandering, 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 wandering. On a Tree Fallen Across the Road, to Hear Us Talk, by Robert Frost. The tree the tempest with a crash of wood throws down in front of us is not to bar our passage to our journey's end for good, but just to ask us who we think we are. Insisting always on our own way so, she likes to halt us in our runner tracks and make us get down in a foot snow, debating what to do without an axe. And yet she knows obstruction is in vain. We will not be put off the final goal. We have it hidden in us to attain, now though we have to seize the earth by pull. And tired of aimless circling in one place, steer straight off after something into space. From the book, Politically Correct Bedtime Stories, Modern Tales for Our Life and Times, by James Finn Garner. Rumpelstiltskin. Long ago, in a kingdom far away, there lived a miller who was very economically disadvantaged. This miller shared his humble dwelling with his only daughter, an independent young woman named Esmeralda. Now, the miller was very ashamed of his poverty, rather than angry at the economic system that had marginalized him and was always searching for a way to get rich quick. "If only I could get my daughter to marry a rich man," he mused in a sexist and archaic way, "she'll be fulfilled and I'll never have to work another day in my life." To this shabby end, he had an inspiration. He would start a rumor that his daughter was able to spin common barnyard straw into pure gold. With this untruth, he would be able to attract the attention of many rich men and marry off Esmeralda. The rumor spread through the kingdom in a manner that just happened to be like wildfire, and soon reached the prince. As greedy and gullible as most men of his station, he believed the rumor and invited Esmeralda to his castle for a May Day festival. But when she arrived, he had thrown her into a dungeon filled with straw and ordered her to spin it into gold. Locked in the dungeon, fearing for her life, Esmeralda sat on the floor and wept. Never had the exploitiveness of the patriarchy been made so apparent to her. As she cried, a diminutive man in a funny hat appeared in the dungeon. "Why are you crying, my dear?" he asked. Esmeralda was startled, but answered him, "The prince has ordered me to spin all this straw into gold." "But why are you crying?" he asked again. "Because it can't be done. What are you, specially abled or something?" The differently statured man laughed and said, "Dearie, you are thinking too much with the left side of your brain, you are. But you are in luck. I will show you how to perform this task, yes, but first you must promise to give me what I want in return." With no alternative, Esmeralda gave her assent. To turn the straw into gold, they took it to a nearby farmer's cooperative, where it was used to thatch an old roof. With a drier home, the farmers became healthier and more productive, and they brought forth a record harvest of wheat for local consumption. The children of the kingdom grew strong and tall, went to a cooperative school, and gradually turned the kingdom into a model democracy with no economic or sexual injustice and low infant mortality rates. For his part, The prince was captured by an angry mob and stabbed to death with pitchforks outside the palace. As new investment money poured in from all over the world, the farmers remembered Esmeralda's generous gift of straw and rewarded her with numerous chests of gold. When all this was done, the diminutive man in the funny hat laughed and said, "That is how you turn straw into gold." Then his expression became menacing. "Now that I have done my work, you must fulfill your part of the bargain. You must give me your firstborn child." Esmeralda shot back at him. "I don't have to negotiate with anyone who would interfere with my reproductive rights." The vertically challenged man was taken aback by the conviction in her voice. Deciding on a change in tactics, he said slyly, "Fair enough, dearie. I'll let you out of the bargain if you can guess what my name is." "All right," said Esmeralda. She paused a second, tapped her chin with her finger, and said, "Would your name be... oh, I don't know, maybe Rumpelstiltskin?" "Ah!" shrieked the man of non-standard height. But how did you know?" she replied. "You are still wearing your name badge from the Little People's Empowerment Seminar." Rumpelstiltskin screamed in anger and stamped his foot, at which point the earth cracked open and swallowed him up in a rush of smoke and sulfur. With her gold, Esmeralda moved to California to open a birth control clinic where she showed other women how not to be enslaved by their reproductive systems and lived to the end of her days as a fulfilled, dedicated single person. A Pageant Played in Vain by C.S. Lewis. Watching the thought that moves within my conscient brain, I learn how often that appearance proves a pageant played in vain. Holding what seems the helm, I make a show to steer, but winds for worse and better overwhelm my purpose and I veer. Thus, if thy guidance reach only my head, then all hardest attempts of mine serves but to teach how oddly the dice fall. To limbs and loins and heart, search with my chemic beam, strike where the self I know not lives apart beneath the surface dream. Break, sun, my crusted earth, pierce razor-edged within, where blind immortal metals have their birth, and crystals clear begin. Thy spirit in secret flows, about our lives in gloom, the mother helping not, nor hindering grows, the child within the womb. Lines composed over 3,000 miles from Tintern Abbey by Billy Collins. I was here before, a long time ago, and now I am here again, is an observation that occurs in poetry as frequently as rain occurs in life. The fellow may be gazing over an English landscape, hillsides dotted with sheep, a row of tall trees topping the downs, or he could be moping through the shadows of a dark Bavarian forest, a wedge of cheese and a volume of fairy tales tucked into his rucksack. But the feeling is always the same. It was better the first time. This time is not nearly as good. I'm not feeling as chipper as I did back then. Something is always missing. Swans, a glint on the surface of a lake, some minor but essential touch, or the quality of things has diminished. The sky was a deeper, more dimensional blue. Clouds were more cathedral-like, and water rushed over rock with greater effervescence. From our chairs we have watched the poor author in his waistcoat as he recalls the dizzying icebergs of childhood and mills around in a field of weeds. We have heard the poets long dead declaim their dying from a promontory, a riverbank next to the haycock within a copse. We have listened to their dismay, the kind that issues from poems, the way water issues forth from hoses, the way the match always gives its little speech on fire. And when we put down the book at last, lean back, close our eyes, stinging with print, and slip in the bookmark of sleep, we will be schooled enough to know that when we wake up, a little before dinner, things will not be nearly as good as they once were. Something will be missing from this long, coffin-shaped room, the walls and windows now only two different shades of gray, the glossy gardenia drooping in its chipped terracotta pot, and on the floor shoes, socks, the browning core of an apple. Nothing will be as it was a few hours ago, back in the glorious past, before our naps, back in that golden age that drew to a close sometime shortly after lunch. Driftwood by Jennifer Love. I once was a tree admired by all. I grew in a forest and stood very tall. But one day was felled and thrown out to the sea. Forever I drifted, it felt like to me. I baked in the sun and was cleansed by the rain, then at last came to rest on the sandy terrain. Now far from the place where I had once grown, tattered on a wood heap was where I was thrown. When you came along and chose me with care, you gave me a purpose and a new life to share. Though I grew from a whole tree as simply a part, I've now found revival from the whole of your heart. The Painter by Shel Silverstein. I'm the man who paints the stripes upon the zebras, and I also paint the warts upon the toad. And with this brush and pot, I give leopards lovely spots, and add some color to the chipmunk's coat. I paint the flaming red on robin redbreast. I pour the blue on bluegills by the shore. And when the fireflies dim, I splash silver paint on him, and he shines more brightly than he did before. Jack Frost, he's just a part-time working fella, touching up the leaves and trees and things. He's famouser than me, but I'm happier than he, 'cause I paint the ones that runs and flies and sings. I've Dreamed of You So Much by Robert Desnos, translated from the French by Carolyn Fauchet and William Kulik. I've dreamed of you so much, you're losing your reality. Is there still time to reach that living body and kiss onto that mouth the birth of the voice so dear to me? I've dreamed of you so much that my arms, accustomed to being crossed on my breast while hugging your shadow, would perhaps not bend to the shape of your body. And faced with the real appearance of what was haunted and ruled me for days and years, I would probably become a shadow. Oh, sentimental balances, I've dreamed of you so much it's no longer right for me to awaken. I sleep standing up, my body exposed to all signs of life and love and you. The only one who matters to me now. I'd be less able to touch your face and your lips than the face and the lips of the first woman who came along. I've dreamed of you so much, walked so much, spoken and lain with your phantom that perhaps nothing more is left me than to be a phantom among phantoms and 100 times more shadow than the shadow that walks and will joyfully walk on the sundial of your life. From the book Chicken Soup for the Dog Lover's Soul by Bob Torin, Pedro the Fisherman. The most touching dog story I've ever heard was told to me 30 years ago by a neighbor on her return from a Mediterranean cruise. The setting of the story is a little cove on the east side of the Spanish island of Mallorca. It was there that an Englishman, a professional diver, lived on his yacht with his dog, a Springer Spaniel. He had tied his yacht to a pier where diving conditions were ideal. Each time the Englishman made a dive, the dog sat anxiously on the pier awaiting his return. One day the dog became so concerned when the Englishman disappeared into the water that he dove in after him. Underwater, the dog saw a school of fish swim past. He grabbed a fish and carried it back to the pier. The Englishman, surprised and pleased, praised him. After that, the dog followed the man on his dives. In the course of the shared diving, the dog developed excellent fishing skills, to the man's considerable amusement. The Englishman told the island's residents of this dog's accomplishments, and they came to the pier to watch. Delighted, they began calling the dog Pedro, after Peter the fisherman. One day, the Englishman became ill, and shortly thereafter he died. Townspeople tried to adopt Pedro, but the dog would never leave the beach for fear he would miss his master's return. He waited on the beach through hot sun and driving rain. People tried to feed him, but eventually they gave up. He wouldn't accept food from anyone other than his master. Finally, to feed himself, Pedro went back to fishing. It happened that on this same island there was a number of stray cats. Ravenous, they would gather to watch Pedro dive into the schools of fish, select the fish he wanted, and bring it back to eat on the shore. Then the cats would fight over what the dog had left uneaten. The dog must have observed this, for one morning, when Pedro had eaten his fill, He dove into the water again and came back up with a large fish, which he placed on the sand before the group of cats. Then he backed off and watched. One black cat, with greater courage than the others, approached the fish, grabbed it, and ran. After that, in addition to keeping vigil for his master, the dog also seemed to consider it his duty to feed those less fortunate. For every morning thereafter, Pedro the fisherman shared his catch with the hungry cats of Mallorca. First Chair by Nicky Giovanni. They say I'm too jazzy for first chair. I bring something different, and maybe something nice. But the orchestra is Baroque, and I am gospel. It is Beethoven, and I'm rhythm and blues. It's piano, and I'm honking sax. My problem is, I make my own muffins, ice cream, and music. Not always the best, but all the ways my best. I look good, and I dress well. I definitely have stage presence. I want to play, I want to play, I want to play. The Lake Isle of Innisfree by William Butler Yeats. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin built there, of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the vales of morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day. I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. While I stand on the roadway, or on the pavement gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core. Sonnet 20 by William Shakespeare. A woman's face with nature's own hand painted, hast thou the master mistress of my passion? A woman's gentle heart, but not acquainted with shifting change, as is false women's fashion, an eye more bright than theirs, less false and rolling, gilding the object whereupon it gazeth, a man in hue, all hues in his controlling, which steals men's eyes and women's souls amazeth, and for a woman wert thou first created, till nature, as she wrought thee, fell a-doting, and by addition me of thee defeated, by adding one thing to my purpose, nothing. But since she pricked thee out for a woman's pleasure, mine be thy love, and thy loves use their treasure. This has been Jennifer Love, reading to you some poetry and prose.